You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. From fabric paint to roof repair, epoxy floor coatings, rust-fighting paint, and more, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.
All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan, we got a big hour today. Alec Manoah will join us in about 25 minutes. 6'6", 260, and he's in Buffalo, and he's feeling good. He's up in the majors. So he'll be making his debut on the show. We're looking forward to that. It's going to be a good chat.
6'6", 260. I didn't realize he was that big.
That's listed as a big unit. He's a big boy. Yeah, he's a big dude.
Grappler will say he's better than Randy Johnson. I love that one.
No, he said Nolan Ryan. Didn't you see the group text? Because he goes, Pearson is Randy Johnson and already better and on the same trajectory. And I said, okay, what's Manoah? And he said Nolan Ryan.
Right. So you got two of the 10 greatest pitchers of all time just waiting to pounce. They're not quite there yet. For whatever reason, you know, Randy Johnson is still down in the minors. But he'll come up at some point. Nolan Ryan, a.k.a. Alec Manoah. So we won't ask him that because he's such a young guy. Like, he would know who Nolan Ryan is, but he obviously never saw him pitch, you know. And Nolan
and
Ryan.
And maybe the fact he's only played two games.
I don't think we're going to ask him if he feels like he can follow in the footsteps of Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan was not good. He was an animal, though. Wasn't he on, like, he was all heat. Wasn't he? Like, all I remember is Nolan Ryan had, like, the stare down. He reminded me of Robin Ventura.
That's his legendary
and beating
fight.
The hell out of Robin Ventura. Didn't just fight him. Yeah. Like, beat the hell out of him.
Old school. Like, I just remember him. He reminded me when I saw the for the Love of the Game with Kevin Costner. I felt like that was Nolan Ryan on the mound.
Yeah,
like,
he
old
was.
Old school, gritty.
Like, pure Texan, big dude. Threw heat and just hammered the strike zone. Hammered it. And, like, he was a no-hitter machine, man. Like, how many did he have throughout his career? Like, 12 or 13 no-hitters or something like that? Like, crazy amounts.
Wow.
And pitched all the way until I think he was 40 or into his early 40s. Because I think he was beating up on Ventura when he was, like, late in his career, too. So Ventura thought, I can take a piece off this guy and – Don't even try, man.
I'm just looking at 26-year-old Robin Ventura charges 46-year-old Nolan Ryan.
46. Wow, I didn't know he was that old when he was doing that.
And he got him in the headlock and just started throwing noogie shots. It was ridiculous.
I love it. But that was him. Like, I own the inside of the plate, and if you got a problem with it, you can come out and have a conversation, but I'm going to beat the hell out of you.
I'm just watching it. It is ridiculous because he was even, like, bombing heat back then. He's 46 on the mound.
Oh,
bombing
yeah.
heat. I still to this day, I forget his name, but you guys would be able to remember it right away. Do you remember the elderly, like, manager or assistant manager who worked first base and he got
tossed, he was with the Yankees.
Yes.
What was his name?
He got the head toss from Pedro.
From Pedro. He just passed away recently.
I know.
His name is escaping me, but I know exactly who you're talking about. He was on Torrey's staff forever.
Yes.
He had been around baseball forever. Like, he was in the bigs for like 60 years or something like that. And that was tough because he runs up Pedro, and Pedro really threw him to the ground in a pretty
tossed him aside
aggressive
and he was down
manner.
The ground.
That was tough.
And then remember he was
Zimmerman,
crying afterwards.
Donnie Zimmerman.
Don Zimmer. That was it. Yep. Donnie Zimmer. And, like, he had the baby face even though he was 80 years old.
And do you remember his media afterwards? He was weeping, like he was upset. He was
That was tough.
That was crazy. And I feel like he had another incident where some, like, father-son lunatic came on and tried stabbing him or something.
No, that was in Chicago.
That was in Chicago. Who was that?
That was the White Sox.
I don't know.
Yeah, first base coach. I don't remember the guy's name. But, yeah, two loser idiots. One, like, I think they both had no shirts off.
Yeah.
And it was like a father-son. Like, imagine that bonding experience. Let's head down to Comiskey, south side Chicago, and jump on the field here and try to stab someone. Like, really scary stuff, man.
Outrageous.
Like, that's happened a few times throughout sports. Remember, like, Monica Seles is probably the most famous one, where I want to say she was the number one player in the world. If she wasn't, certainly top three, top five.
Right.
And that is one of the most – like heartbreaking, but just difficult videos to witness. Like, I haven't seen it in years, and naturally, it's not really in circulation. I think most news networks, sports networks, are like, we're not going to show that.
Yeah,
like, you don't want to see it. But the aftermath of it was crazy. Then there's the Nancy Kerrigan. Like, there have been. That's a list. It's a pretty dark list. It's probably not a good one for mailing in Friday when we're trying to go into the weekend with positive vibes. But, like, the wildest, you know, sports interactions where it really became violent. You know, like, like that happens for sure.
Well,
it's scary, man.
That fan that came on the ice in Buffalo, wasn't it Rob Ray that was – Brad May, one of the two, was just wailing on that guy in the bench.
That was the guy that jumped onto the bench. And then there was the guy in Boston who was going after the ref, I think, and then he got hit from behind. Remember,
just
got
crushed from the linesman. Ronnie Stickle.
Yeah, Ronnie Stickle just buries him.
That was one of
the
worst hit from behind of all time.
Like, that's more than the Shifley four-game suspension, I'll tell you that. That one.
Yes.
But, I don't know how I went down a real bad path there, but I just – that Don Zimmer one still to this day, when I think of, like, a manager or any type of, like, interaction or fight in baseball, I always come back to that one because that was a tough one. Like,
that
was
one
just
– really was, because he did run at Pedro.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember Pedro being remorseful at all.
No,
I don't think Pedro ever stepped up and was chewing on tears or anything. I don't think he said anything. Other than, hey, what do you want me to do? The guy's running at me, so I just moved him out of the way. I pushed him out of the way. It was really tough. I don't know what Don Zimmer was doing, though. Like, what are you doing running at a player on the field?
You're running at the pitcher.
At 80 years old. He had to have been 80 at the time.
He would have been close. In his 70s, for sure. Like, he was basically a mascot with the Yankee staff, and he was, I think, the bench coach, but... Yeah,
wow.
That was back in the early 2000s. There he is. And then just, like, that's really, it was a pretty violent push. I'm surprised no one went at Pedro and tried to take a piece out of him if you're the Yankees, but.
I still don't, I don't know the backstory. Obviously, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees hated each other. So, it's like somebody from the Canadians and the Leafs, you know, long history, or the Senators and Leafs. Like,
but you never meet on the field to play. Like, coaches don't go onto the ice.
Right.
That's the difference between, you know, baseball and hockey, I guess, is when the dugout's clear, everyone's out there. Like, relief pitchers are coming in from the bullpen, you know. Like, people are just storming the middle of the field. 9 times out of 10, nothing happens. You just kind of stand around, but – every once in a while, it gets away from you, and a Don Zimmer situation can take place.
During the NHL lockout, I played in England, and right as the season got canceled, and the guy who brought me over is a guy from St. Albert, Stan Marple, and he played in the league. He was a tough guy in the AJHL, and he was the coach, and he brought me over. I had a relationship with him. There was a line brawl that was going on, and I kind of skated out, and I turned around. And he was in the middle of it in his suit. He had jumped onto the ice, and because he had recently retired and he had kind of gotten involved, I remember thinking, like, why are you here?
Yeah, no,
like,
kidding.
He was our
coach.
Know
your boundaries. You talk about know your lane. That defines the terminology, stay in your lane.
He never got thrown out of the game or anything. People are like, okay, Marbs, get back on the bench.
Yeah,
he was literally in the middle of the scrum in his suit yelling at people.
Well, Van Gundy's the best one of that, where a coach gets right into the middle of it, and his, you know, his hair is everywhere. It's a disaster to begin with. And he's holding on to, I think it's Alonzo Mourning's leg. I can't remember whose
leg
he was holding on to.
Yes, and his bacon strips were all falling downwards towards the court, and he just looked – it was a horrifying sight.
It's the worst.
Like, he had the carpet all shoved over to the right side, and he was lying like he was holding on to a rope on a mountainside, and his salad all flopped down to the ground.
It was tough. It's
the worst look.
On Van Guns.
The most vulnerable position a coach has ever put themselves in, and a position to be ridiculed for the rest of time. And the player that he's holding on to isn't even acknowledging that he's there. It's like a mosquito's on his knee. Like, he didn't even stop the confrontation he was having with the opponent. It's like, what is this guy doing? Like, it would have been great if he just started flicking him off, like kicking him away. Flung him into the fifth
like a
row.
Small dog.
Yeah, like, leave me alone, Van Gundy.
Yeah,
why are you out here? And go comb your hair. over.
It's got to be a top five, you know, worst transactions. The Zimmer's got to be one of them. The Peter Jacobson in the Fan.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bad transaction,
that's
too.
Speaking of which, there's reports coming out of the Memorial, which I don't know if they're true, and I don't know if anyone can corroborate them, because one guy in particular started the thread, and everyone jumped on it, and it just started going viral online. And then multiple people started quote-tweeting it that are like reporters or blue check marks, quote-unquote, that are down at Muirfield Village saying that they have seen it and they have witnessed it, that Bryson DeChambeau is kicking people out, or having security kick people out who are calling him Brooksy, because that's the new thing.
They're saying that stupid video where somebody's saying, "Let's go, Brooksy." So every time he's out there, they're saying, "Let's go, Brooksy." Because remember, Brooks Koepka goes, "Whoever keeps calling me Brooksy's got to get out of here."
Right.
So they're saying, "Let's go, Brooksy," whenever DeChambeau is, and he's just, him and his caddy are just picking people off and saying, "Get him out."
That's so lame, though. Like, if it's true, like, what are you...
Kicking them out?
Kicking them out is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, because you know what it's going to do.
What are you talking about? It's golf. Okay,
it's
going to
continue. What you're doing is you're asking for every single tournament. It's going to be a Happy Gilmore, Shooter McGavin crowd around this guy. And every time he walks around, it's going to be Brooksy, Brooksy. Like, instead of Jackass, it's going to be Brooksy. And that's what's going to happen. And he's going to get into a fight with Bob Barker at some point.
You think the people commenting are ridiculous, not the act of throwing them out is ridiculous.
No, I think the act of throwing them out is ridiculous. I think Bryson DeChambeau...
Well, dude, it's golf.
So what?
You can't be walking around heckling people. It's not Happy Gilmore. There was a match with Davis Love and somebody, and some dude kept yelling, "No love for you," every time he was about to hit the ball.
That's right.
And every time he was about to go out, he's like, "No love for you." And finally, Davis is like, "Where is this guy? You can't be going out there half in the bag yelling, 'Hey, Brooksy, Brooksy.'"
If it's one guy, I might grant you that, even though that I think is soft. Like, take your lumps and move on to the next tournament. Like, you're a pro athlete. But if it's multiple people and every hole you're dealing with it, you really think you're going to stop it by having security find them and kick them out? Like, this is just – they're just going to continue to grow and grow. It's like an organism. I'm telling you, this guy's going to get to a tournament. They're going to get down to the waste management. There's going to be 100,000 people yelling, "Brooksy, Brooksy." What's he going to do? Demand that everyone leaves? Oh, that he has no patrons, no fans walking him around? You're asking for trouble is my point.
I think it's
amateur hour. Like, just
so let me ask you this
move.
Question. If me and you go to the Memorial – and you've had 6 points, are you going to say, "Hey, Brooksy, let's go"?
No, because I'm not heckle guy. I'm not yell and scream guy. But someone else will.
I grew up with a guy who went to a golf tournament in, like, Chicago area. And he was heckling Tiger. And they asked him to leave. And first and foremost, like, I was embarrassed when he told me that.
Yeah, it is embarrassing.
Like, first, why do you need to heckle anybody? And to go after a guy like Tiger, and I think it was after he'd had, you know, some issues.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So it was getting – it was like Perkins. Well, he was yelling Perkins, Diner.
No, but it was something about – I can't remember what it was, but it was, like, egregious. And I'm like, what would possess you? You fly in to see the best player in the world, and then you decide, no, I'm not going to enjoy his work. I'm actually going to chirp him from the galley.
Jamie, why does a grown man who's sober yell "mashed potatoes" when a guy hits a tee ball? Like Duffy tweeted the other day, what I'm hearing from men at golf tournaments is concerning for the species. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand a grown ass man videotaping like golfer. Like, is it all for the gram or what? What is it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think people just get carried away. You get into it. Someone starts the wave at some point. A grown adult decides we're going to get a wave going. Like, someone does it. You get caught up in the moment. I don't know. I can't explain it.
I don't mind it.
It's not. Yeah, but exactly. It's not the end of the world. Who cares? You paid for your ticket. You went. I know golf is all stuffy and it's about etiquette, but I get the impression like golf is moving in a different direction. We talked about the gear they're wearing on tour. It's not far off from someone being sponsored by like Lululemon and being decked out in Lululemon
track
gear.
Suit.
Yeah, a tracksuit playing golf.
Okay, that's different. The way you were talking, I thought you were going to say they were going to have, like, a porn site hoodie on. Like
No, I'm not saying it's going to get carried away, but calling some guy Brooksy. Now, if you're following him around the course and bothering a player, then that's what you're going to get
them
tossed out.
That
happens with every sport. Yeah, if there's someone in the stands constantly yelling at someone or doing something, you can get them thrown out. But every hole you show up to, there's someone else saying, you know, hit it long, hit it straight, Brooksy, and you snap and say, get that guy out of here. You're asking for trouble is my point.
All right, Brooksy.
There it is. I'd let it fade, man.
But the guy's at 50 Coors Light, though, for sure.
Probably.
Like you can hear in his voice that he's buckled.
All right, Brooksy.
Yeah, that's a couple of Coors Lights.
Corey Crawford at the. That sounds exactly like Corey Crawford at the Cup Parade. Like,
right.
That's what it sounds like. A guy buckled like that. So he should get chicken winged out of there. But you're right. It's a fine line because.
It's a fine line. He shouldn't get chicken winged out of there because he's having a couple of beers at a good time. He's allowed to do that. Just because we're stuck in our homes and can't go anywhere doesn't mean other people can't have fun.
I know.
But anyway, Alec Manoah will join us in about 10 minutes. Game two tonight, Jets Habs. Shifley got the four games, which we're all familiar with now, which I thought is rich. I thought that was more than he was going to get. I thought he'd get maybe two, maybe three. But listen, the Habs, regardless of how it's happened, they're in a good position here. Like in the previous round, no one thought this was going to matter when the Leafs were up 3-1. But John Tavares, they never had to play against him. He was out the whole round. Again, it was an accident. It happens. It was really, really unfortunate. But it probably benefited the Habs, certainly by the end of the series, not having Tavares in there. And now Scheifele put himself in this position. But if you're Montreal, you're up 1-0 and their best player's out for the next four games. Like, what an opportunity for Montreal here.
Yeah, they don't need to go around looking to beat people up. What they need to do is say, let's take advantage of this guy not being in the lineup. Because Winnipeg did it to Edmonton. They went into Edmonton and won the first two on the road. You know it's big trouble when that happens. And there's one guy, I got to do an SC tonight, hit tonight, and there's one guy I'm going to be watching for the Winnipeg Jets.
Dubois.
Take a guess who that's going to be.
Dubois.
Pierre-Luc Dubois. I have no idea the motivation he had to get traded, but if there's any part of him that wanted to be a spotlight centerman and be in a Canadian market and have a big night and put himself on the map, like, here is his chance where he can say, all right, I'm the guy, I'll be the guy, I'll play like the guy. Because Paul Maurice has kind of skirted around him all year saying quarantine, blah, blah, blah. He's got to find his right chemistry. But at the end of the day, he hasn't gotten to his game. We saw him playing the bubble last year, guys. He was pretty damn good.
Yeah, he's capable of doing it.
He was pretty damn good. So it's like, where is that game, and can he find it tonight? I think Stastny ultimately might play. But no Shifley. Go ahead and take the reins here because he's still got a lot of depth up front. But he has got to be a go-to guy.
I agree. I think he's got to be an impact guy. Their depth, you know, Lowry will probably go up, Dubois go up, and then, you know, that Perreault, who's a Swiss Army knife, he can go anywhere, and I think Kopp will go to the middle on the third line. Like, they do have depth, but I'm waiting for Dubois. Like, what we saw out of him against the Leafs in that series in Columbus, like, made me think he's going to be an elite number one centerman for 15 years in this league. Now, it may have been just lightning in a bottle, and he's only 22 years old. So, you know, there's lots of runway there, but he hasn't been as impactful as I've expected him to be in Winnipeg. There's been nights where he's been invisible, to be honest.
No, he said actually a pretty awful run. Like, Line A did too. It's worked out for both teams poorly.
Yeah.
Like, Line A was awful in Columbus, and Dubois hasn't been great in Winnipeg, but he's more than capable of doing it. I'd go as far to say, if he plays his A game, he's the best center on the ice tonight. Like, I don't think the Habs have anyone that's better than him if he's playing the way he's capable of playing.
Yeah.
So if I'm Winnipeg, I still feel like you can't think that the series is done. It's like what Toronto went through. Like, if you believe in your team, one player cannot derail that unless it's the goaltender. And Hellebuck's playing tonight. So you still have Hellebuck. You need to rely on Dubois. Stastny is not going to be anywhere close to 100% if he plays at all, but he's capable of pulling his weight. And listen, they're going to need big outings from, you know, unsung heroes. They're going to need that third line, guys like Lowry and Kopp and others who have had big years at times. They're going to have to elevate their game. Everyone's going to have to pull their weight.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be easy because Scheifele, four games, he's not going to appeal. He's going to chew on it. He's out. He's done. And he needs to hope that there's a game six or a game seven so he can get back into the lineup.
I was talking to my buddy. I was talking to my buddy Hustler in Winnipeg this afternoon, and the thing about Shifley, and it was just it's a hard hit to describe how awful it was, because if you look at it, you don't really see an elbow. There wasn't the elbow element, guys, and it wasn't like greasy, but it was. It almost had like a European vibe to it, where you're at the World Championships or the World Juniors. And someone just gets crushed so hard, you're like, that's got to be something. Well, you know what I mean? Like, it was just such a crushing blow. And obviously, he didn't go for the puck, and the puck was already in the net. There was a lot of bad stuff about it, but the actual, there was no elbow or stuff like that. But he just hit him so hard, there was got to be a suspension for him.
Right, and the aftermath of it all, he was
sure.
KO'd
if this kid got up and punched him in the face, he gets a 2-minute penalty.
Oh,
for charging.
It wouldn't be, and everyone would be saying, "Wow, what a hit!" Like that's what it would be.
But
it goes from what a hit to
injuries are factored in too.
And it should be, Jamie.
I don't know if you saw. I mean, we got a break, but I don't know if you saw the NHL player safety video. If you watched it, that's the best video as far as an explanation I've seen come out of that office. Put it that way.
Homework for people. Yeah. That's riveting stuff. George Parros and the boys.
But it was clear.
All you can ask for. I'm joking. Exactly. That's obviously all you can ask for. Alek Manoah coming up. He's through two starts. Big series coming up with Houston down in Buffalo. The next 13 games for the Jays. They've got Houston, the White Sox, the Yankees, and the Red Sox coming up. This is the stretch run. You can stay above water here. You're feeling good. Because a lot of games against Baltimore after that, Seattle, Miami again. You got an opportunity to do some really big things over the next 20, 25 games. So Alek Manoah will join us. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Alek Manoah will join us here in a moment. Get his take on being up in the bigs and through two starts. He had a great debut down at Yankee Stadium. We got to ask him also about the rain delay where he was supposed to pitch, and then it got rained out, and then he went in the afternoon, during a doubleheader, and what was running through his mind, like he, I'm sure, had been dreaming about making that debut for a long time and had to wait almost 24 more hours. But he'll call in here in just a moment. LeBron and the Lakers are out. You haven't mentioned that yet, but, man, people are turning on LeBron and the Lakers too. Like, now everyone's convinced they're done. Window's over, closed, never winning again. LeBron is finished. He's got to leave.
What about people, Hayes, that were sick and tired of seeing Steph Curry and LeBron in the finals? Where's your headspace at right now?
Well, I like it because LeBron went there every single year for a decade.
No kidding. Yeah. I love seeing a guy like Booker break through. Instead of being known as a guy on a crap team in Arizona that scored 70 points in a game, now he's making it count where it counts.
Well, look who's through, right? Phoenix is through, Utah's through, Denver's through, and Dallas might get through. The Warriors are gone. The Clippers are gone or could be gone. The Lakers are gone. You know, a lot of Houston ran it for a long, long time. They were awful this year. But, like, a lot of the usual suspects,
gone.
See you later, man. Oklahoma City was good for a while. They're not anymore. I mean, it feels like a new era out west.
Yep.
So we'll get into that a little bit later on. But the talk of the town up here the last couple of weeks has been Alek Manoah. And it's too bad we can't see him down at the Rogers Center. But he made his debut down at Yankee Stadium. Lights out. Pitched a couple of nights ago down in Buffalo, and he's making his debut. Here he is on Overdrive for the first time, Alek Manoah. What's happening, Alek?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, man. What's that big league lifestyle like? How you feeling up with the bigs?
It's amazing, man. Dream come true.
Yeah? I'm sure you've been dreaming about it, clearly, for a long time. We were talking about it when you were supposed to make your debut at Yankee Stadium, and then it gets rained out. And whether or not that helped the nerves, hurt the nerves, can you take us through that kind of 24 hours where you thought you were going to start and it gets rained out and you had to wait the next day? What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was kind of like I got a practice run. I kind of got to ride the bus, got to walk into the ballpark, got to settle into my locker, and then it was kind of like, hey, game's over. So I was like, all right, some of those jitters are out. Let's do it again tomorrow. So it was kind of just like a little practice run, a little rehearsal dinner.
How cool was it, the love that your family got? They were showing your mom in the stands and all your family was there for your first game. I know how important it is to have support throughout your career growing up. How cool was that?
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, there's been a lot of you know, a lot of work, you know, not just, you know, for me, but all my family, all the support and everything. So it was really good that, you know, that moment just wasn't mine. It was all of ours.
You mentioned a practice run, and then you finally get to get up on the mound. How was the nerves? How was your mindset? You know, and obviously you had a fantastic outing, so it worked out. But how were you going into it as far as nerves and wanting to settle in right away?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the nerves were in there pretty good. You know, well, you work all your life to get to a certain point, and then it's all there, you know, so you kind of don't want to skip over those nerves. You want to feel all of them. You want to feel every emotion. You kind of just want to enjoy the moment. You want to take it all in. You know, I was able to do that. And, you know, once I threw those first four balls to DJ, kind of was able to lock it in after that. And then just enjoy going out there and winning a ball club with the team.
Obviously, you would have made your debut anywhere. I mean, ultimately, it's not up to you. The team's going to call you up. And whenever you take the ball, you take the ball. And whenever you hit the mound, you hit the mound. But the fact that it was at Yankee Stadium making your MLB debut, did that make it that much more special? And what was that experience like knowing the history of that stadium and playing that team?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Cuban heritage, family members of mine and you know, a lot of friends of mine in Miami that always grew up Yankee fans. And, you know, the Yankees have always been, you know, kind of the, you know, at the top of the food chain. So to be able to go in there and, you know, the team put me in a position where obviously they showed a ton of confidence, you know, to send me out there against them in that atmosphere. So it was just amazing, a really sweet moment for myself and for all my family.
Did any of the veteran guys, we'll call it a nice dinner, did anybody take you out for a nice dinner after your first game in New York?
No, I wouldn't say we did any of that. But I've been eating some of the Korean food with Ryu, so we'll say that counts.
Okay, that'll work. In Buffalo, man, Buffalo's got some decent spots. You're a big dude, 6'6", 260. And, like, that intimidation's clearly a part of your game. I mean, you hit, you know, mid-90s, high-90s on the gun. How can you utilize that in the future? And now that you're in the bigs, you know, being a big guy that can throw heat, how much might that help you throughout your career?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, velocity is not everything. It's kind of how you set it up, and it's kind of where you throw it. So the velocity is something I've never really had to worry about my entire life, thank the Lord. And it's something that, you know, I think it helped me a ton, being able to have hitters try and gear up for your mid-90s to upper 90s fastball. It kind of makes that slider, you know, a lot more better. It makes that changeup a lot more better, too. So I think that's something that's definitely going to open the door for everything else throughout my career.
Well, what, like working with Pete Walker, what do you feel like you have to improve upon? You know, you're going to throw the fastball, and I'm sure, you know, you got to pick your spots and you want to pitch as opposed to just throw. But in terms of that changeup slider, of those two pitches, which one do you think you need to continue to work on, and how can you make that happen to the point where once you add that extra pitch to the repertoire, you're really going to be lights out?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything. You know, I got 9 1/3 innings in the big leagues and 35 innings in pro ball. So I think, you know, there's up to this point, it's been amazing. The success has been great, but there's definitely a lot to work on the slider, you know, what parts of the plates we throw it at, and kind of just kind of still learning how the changeup's going to play off the sinker and when it's going to play best off the sinker and how we can play it off the four seam. So just, you know, having, you know, Pete there, being able to learn from him and all the experience he's had in the big leagues, you know, and just understanding hitters, I think will continue to allow me to do that.
We're chatting with Alek Manoah, and you mentioned something there that is a rarity. I mean, there was a lot of concern that maybe you wouldn't be able to get to the majors this quickly because of the limited amount of pro experience because of the pandemic. You know, last year you just couldn't find a place to pitch. How did you manage to make sure that the pandemic did not hurt your progression and your rise to the majors? I mean, what were you doing last year that allowed Atkins and Shapiro and Montoyo and company to say, you know what, this guy's ready and we can hand him the ball in the major leagues?
Yeah, well, I thank the Lord that, you know, everybody was, you know, trapped in their house and things like that. And, you know, thankfully I had my brother and we were together during the pandemic and, you know, he's training and playing baseball as well. So we were able to not really miss a beat, man. You know, we kind of were able to train every day, throw every day and get everything that we needed to get in. And, you know, we also used the pandemic to be able to start a business. We opened the gym together called Manoah Driven. and kind of just kept that going through and was able to kind of just get everything that we needed to do except for playing the live games, you know. So once everything was kind of more in control with the whole situation and things like that, parks started to open up. There's obviously a lot of South Florida talent down there as well. So was able to get a lot of work in with them during the off season and things like that. And don't really feel like we missed too much of a beat.
Have you had an eye-opening situation on the mound where you threw one pitch where it's just been your go-to and somebody got lumber on it and you said, I can't believe this guy hit that?
There's been a probably every at-bat that I've had so far, I throw a pitch and I'm kind of just like, oh, how did he foul that off? Or, you know, what was he thinking there? So, you know, like I told you, man, there's going to be a lot of learning experiences the more and more I face, you know, new hitters.
With Alek Manoah, you had yourself a great spring. And that we love that saying, is having a great spring, as if that means something. Like, you know, you got to get to the real stuff. And ultimately, again, it comes down to your growth and your progression and what else is going on the 40-man roster and who could be available come opening day. But you did have yourself a great spring, and there was a lot of buzz that came with it. Did you feel at that point your chances were being elevated? And were you picking up on any vibes from Montoyo Walker, the front office, that you maybe did have a chance here coming up maybe earlier than some people projected because of how well you were pitching in the spring?
No, I didn't really think of that. You know, I've always kind of just tried to keep the expectations a little bit low, kind of not get my bubble bursted. So I kind of, you know, I just went out there, did my job, threw as well as I possibly could. That's really all I could control. And, you know, when they sent me the AAA, I kind of, you know, kind of got the urge that I was like, all right, I'm a little closer than I thought I was. So, you know, just continue to do the work there. And then, you know, the call definitely came by surprise. So, you know, just extremely thankful to them and glad I was able to be in those positions to succeed.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible journey, and you're up here now, and we wish you nothing but success and good luck moving forward, and we really appreciate you taking time. Thank you for doing this, Alek.
No, yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me.
You got it. There he is, Alek Manoah, the Toronto Blue Jays. And, yeah, pretty cool story. And,
yeah,
like, the fact that he could – obviously, everyone was training, but he didn't pitch last year, like, didn't face a live batter, and – I guess, like you said, he's got his brother who's a ball player, and they were working on some things. But
yeah, he was lumped in with all those athletes where we're like, what, like American Hockey League, oi, like, what
everything.
The hell are these guys doing?
Well,
yeah.
We had some fun with it. We had some fun with it last year where it's like you go to the Walmart parking lot and start hitting pop flies. You know,
right.
That's really what was happening for some minor league baseball players. I mean, we're joking, but they didn't have a platform. They didn't have anywhere to play for a while. Like, that's tough. Like, the development of a lot of these young athletes in any sport has been hampered by this pandemic because
Absolutely. They're
not in, you know, the money at the big clubs, they were losing money. They're hemorrhaging their situation, and they're more focused on that situation, like, in any sports. So I can't imagine that at the minor league level or down to single A or something like that. Just it's like not that they didn't care, but they just didn't.
They didn't have the resources, too.
Yeah,
that's a good
exactly.
point. I mean, that was a big part of the last spring, remember? Like, it seemed like every day there was a new news item about a team that was going under or,
right.
you know, a part of the system that was probably going to have to leave. Now, it's all going to come back at some point, more or less. You know, like, once you get through this and money starts flowing in and COVID's officially behind everyone, these companies are still making a lot of money. You know, Major League Baseball is worth a lot. Owners pump a lot of money into it. The resources will be there. But during the pandemic, they weren't. And because of the restrictions, you couldn't go. Like, he lives down in Florida. He couldn't go to Dunedin. Like, you weren't allowed to just show up, you know. So you're basically working from home. And it really says something about him and his drive and his ambition, the fact that he's barely pitched the past 12 months, and he's already up in the majors. And he's aware of that. He's like 35 minor league innings, 9 1/3 in the majors or whatever it is, and yet he's here, and he's a part of the rotation, and he's got a real opportunity.
Dude, I just hope it works out, man. I told you yesterday, why can't we have nice things? Like, just let it continue. Let him to be dominant. Let it be like other stories in the majors where the guy is just the stud from the start, and it continues. Like, just let it happen, please.
Yeah.
Because it would be such a treat. You know what it's like in the summertime, man, when you're just lounging around or doing whatever, and you're just bouncing around the game because it's always on. You could have a nap, you can do whatever, and it's still there. What a treat when he's on the mound, because I'll never forget, like, being in big cities, and there's a buzz in the city. Oh, Roger Clemens is pitching today. Oh, let's go to the game. Because that's what it would be like, man, if that stud's on the mound every fifth day.
Well, and he's on a team now. This isn't about building for the future. Like, he's jumping on a moving ship, a club who wants to make the playoffs and feels like they can. And that's got to be, again, very inspiring. I mean, you're going to give it your all anyway. You're a young kid. You don't know any better. But the positive vibes of a winning clubhouse can go a long way, too, with the development of young players, right? Like, you show up and it's a disaster. That's tough, man. Like, you're looking around, you're like, this team sucks. I don't even know who's going to be here.
You become a loser yourself.
You can pick up on losing habits really, really quickly. Like, that's the whole culture thing that we always talk about, that no one can really, really define until you're in it on one side or the other. You know, the good side, you're like, this team just wins and everyone works together and we all get along. And, hey, I don't know, I'm feeling good. Like, I'm playing pretty well. And when I don't play that well, my teammates bail me out, which is what happened with Manoah a couple of days ago. Where if you're on an awful team, you're just like, everyone hates each other in here. The manager's going to get fired. You know, it sucks.
There's no stability.
There's no stability.
Yeah. That doesn't
and
help your progression.
Manoah's on the right side of it. It's not as if they're the Dodgers or anything like that. Like, the Jays are still growing. But they're a good team. And they're a young team. And they're a team that doesn't complain, even though they're in a tough spot. They're playing in Buffalo right now. They were in Dunedin a week ago. You know, they're not even home. They're not even in a major league park. But it doesn't appear to be affecting them. And I think that's a good thing for Manoah. And you've got Ryu and you've got Ray. Stripling and Mats are crapshoots every fifth day. You don't know what you're going to get.
Don't say that about our guy, Chicken Strips.
Chicken Strips, at times it can be overcooked, undercooked, and sometimes it's just right.
True.
When it is, it's a thing of beauty.
It's got the buffalo sauce on it when it's just right, but sometimes they're dried up and it's sad.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Crunchy, sauced. But if they're sauced up perfectly,
it's butter, man.
Good.
It's as good as it gets. And, again, like I said, there's a big stretch for the Jays. Houston in town, and then they're at the White Sox and Yankees and Red Sox, and then they got a bunch of games coming up against Baltimore. They still haven't played Baltimore yet, and the Orioles are terrible. So you can get through this next, 10 to 13 games above water. You got a chance to do some damage on the back end of it, and then all of a sudden you're closing in on the All-Star break and you're feeling pretty good, right? You're in a good spot. So we'll see what happens. The Jays, again, back in action tonight. Ryu on the mound for the Jays. Ray Ferraro will join us in about 25 minutes. Back into LeBron and the Lakers out last night, and back into the hockey games tonight, and a couple of OT winners last night as well. Yeah. Both games were pretty good games. Goaltenders showed up big time both games last night.
Massive win by the Canes, man. Wow.
Yeah, they needed that.
Man, did they need that. And I had a thought watching it last night that does pertain to the Leafs and the reaction that Leaf fans always have when they go out and you start watching other teams who continue to play well. Oof. I'll tell you about that. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray's coming up in about 15 minutes. Marcellus Wiley will join us, our buddy Marcellus. He's a big Clipper fan, and the Clippers on the verge of going out tonight back in Dallas, taking on the Mavs. So we'll get his take on that. And he's in L.A. He's from L.A. What happened with LeBron, the Lakers, and we'll get into some NFL stories with him as well. So we love catching up with Marcellus. He'll join us at 5:30. So I'm watching some of the hockey games last night, both of them going to overtime. And massive win for Carolina. Absolutely needed that. You go down 3-0, it's over. I think they're still in a pretty tough spot anyway, but still they needed that win. And in Boston, Marchand scores one of the worst overtime goals you'll ever see. But he got it off, right? And he placed it perfectly. Yeah. But Varlamov's got to stop that.
Yeah, you got to make that save.
Clearly, that was like in the third row. But and Marchand is one of the most clutch playoff performers of the last decade, man. He'd be in the top five. Right,
like if
we were to run off a list of the most clutch playoff performers since 2010, he'd be in the top five, I would think, the way he's played.
Who's ahead of him?
Well, I mean, Sid's got a couple of Conn Smythes, and it's a good question though. Like Bergeron's right there with him, I would say.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to think of four guys that are ahead of them other than Sid. Man, it's like, he just gets it done. That's it. End of story.
He does. I mean, Taves and Kane, you got to remember them, I guess, too.
They've got a few cups in there. Yeah, I forgot about that. But he is in the top five, regardless.
He's unbelievable. He's a big game player. big game performer. Aho was dancing, had a big night last night. And I was thinking about it because we do this every year. Like when the Leafs go out, it's always like, oh, now that I'm watching these other teams, now I realize the Leafs weren't, they couldn't keep up with them. They're really not that good. And the reason I think people feel that way is because the Leafs' best players didn't do it the way they're supposed to. Like, you look at it last night, Brad Marchand, it's McKinnon, it's Makar, it's Rantanen, it's Aho and Svechnikov last night. Right. Barzal scores to tie it. Like, that's why you can't picture it if you're a Leaf fan, because you haven't seen Matthews and Marner do it. They're capable of playing the same way. They're
exactly.
As good.
And I explained it when it happened. The reason that they won the North Division is because of the way that Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander play, and that's what separates their teams from other teams in the North Division. And when they didn't, it turns it into a coin flip because they weren't there. They weren't performing right. Like a McKinnon, Marchand, Braden Point, Aho. That's
and the
why
same
those,
thing would happen to those teams if they didn't show up.
That's right.
You're right.
But that is the major difference.
The difference is, though, I'm watching those games last night, breaking it down. Those teams play harder, man. Right from 1 to 12, they're forwards. Like Casey Cizikas, like he would destroy
Hyman.
Pierre Engvall.
Okay,
destroy, like,
I give you Hyman, I can give you Foligno, I can give you, like, depth guys are depth guys.
I'm telling you right now, that Boston and the Islanders would chew the Leafs up the way they played. The way that they played against Montreal, because those teams play with structure and they play hard every shift.
The Leafs were a top five defensive team in the league. Like, if Matthews and Marner play the way they're supposed to, they don't.
Right.
It doesn't
but
mean
they,
that they guaranteed to win. I'm not saying the Leafs would win a cup guaranteed.
But
so
I'm
saying they're better
you're
than Colorado or Tampa.
Apples and oranges.
What I'm saying,
we're talking about the star players.
Exactly.
Right now.
What I'm saying
exactly.
is I saw Pasternak get buried last night, take a massive hit, get up and drive the middle of the ice. Did you see any of the star players from the Leafs do that?
But that's what I'm
Nothing.
Saying. Noodles, you're missing my point. I think I don't know why you're taking it personally that I'm saying this.
No,
but
I'm not.
What I'm saying is you look at those teams and you're like, man, those teams are way better than the Leafs because their best players do that. Like Austin Matthews is as good as anyone else playing. He's better than Sebastian Aho, but Aho had himself a night. Last night, tic-tac-toe, Stamkos, Kucherov, Point. Matthews could – he's capable of doing it. He doesn't do it.
Right.
Hasn't done it. Marner hasn't done it. And that's my point. Once you get further down the lineup, you can pick which guy you like over the other guy. But do I like Kazikas? Yes. Do I like Hyman? Yes. Do I like a healthy Foligno? Can he do it? What I'm saying is when you get deeper down the lineup, it's largely interchangeable for the most part. There are teams that are better. Colorado's better than the Leafs. Tampa's better than the Leafs. I'm not disputing that. But what I'm saying is when your big boys don't perform – you get this impression like those teams are way better. No, they're not. It's that their best players played the way they're supposed to. That's why. Like last night, it was Point, Aho, Kucherov, Marchand, Barzal. That's what happened.
Yeah,
that's what happened
point.
Last night.
What I was talking about was the style. That's all I'm saying is like that. I felt like if you look at those games that I'm watching last night, all four of them, Tampa, Carolina, Boston, the Islanders, those guys played playoff hockey.
That's
top
a totally
to
different topic, though. What I think Brian's trying to say is
and you're,
if, you're star,
on,
if
Brian,
your top guys don't do that, then it really doesn't matter how structured and gritty your bottom guys play anyway. Because the top-end guys, they are what makes it count. Like, those are the guys that are impact
top
players.
Top-end talent delivered.
Tampa
That's
Bay, it's
saying.
Like
delivered.
Every goal they score, it's Kucherov Point, and I always reference them because I have no choice. It's like Braden, people are like, well, maybe Mitch Marner's not that big of a guy. No, he's not. But you know what? Braden Point's not either, man. He's
5'8". Look where he scored last night. Look where he
yes,
scored.
Yes, he's 5'8".
Five feet above the crease.
You're right. I apologize. I'm arguing
That's what
something
I mean.
Different.
No, yeah,
and
no,
you're right.
And you're
top
right,
players
Newer.
Have to deliver.
Exactly. I'm just talking about the viewpoint of it all. You're right. We're both right here. We're looking at a different view.
Just different lenses.
You're right in terms of the intensity, in terms of the overall grind. You need that, too. I don't dispute that. What I'm saying is every year it's like, oh, the Leafs couldn't compete with them. I'm like, they could if their best players did what the other best players do, right? Like, Austin Matthews can compete with any player in the world. He's a top five player in the world. But if he plays like a mediocre player, then, of course, McKinnon looks a million times better. Pasternak looks a million times better. They're not. They're not they're not substantially better player than Matthews. But if Matthews plays mediocre, like he did in games 5, 6, and 7, all of a sudden you're like, Leafs can't roll with them. Of course they can't, because Kerfoot can't do it.
Right.
Engvall can't do it, to your point. Of course they can't.
It's the playoff adjustment. That's the difference. Like, those guys are doing it when the game is different.
Exactly.
All they have to do is adjust to how that game is being played,
yep,
and maximize their game within it. And then you see, you know, can Matthews handle that physicality? Absolutely. He's a big, strong guy. You know, Mitch Marner will be able to adapt to limited time and space. He's going to have to be creative, yeah, in a tighter space, or
you
move
talk
the puck
about,
quicker.
You could talk about clutch gene, or what is the other one?
Killer instinct.
Killer instinct,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, they're so talented, it's just a determination and an intensity saying, I'm going to go out there and be the best player on the ice, and nobody's going to have anything to say about it. Because that's what all these other guys are doing. That's all it takes.
Right.
Just say to yourself, I'm going to go out there and be the best player on the ice, because that's what I do every single night of the regular season.
Right. Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
And you're right, too. And you know who else is sitting and watching? Is McDavid and Draisaitl.
Exactly.
Saying the same thing, going, yep, like, hey, we, you know, and they must be just chewing themselves to death right
being
now,
like,
watching
why
playoff
we,
hockey.
Why didn't we step up? Why didn't we,
right,
perform the way you're capable of performing?
What did we do? Yeah.
And, you know, listen, I don't think the Leafs are as good as Colorado, Tampa, Boston. I don't think they are right now. Vegas, I don't think they're as good as them. But are they as good as the Islanders? I think they could probably play with the Islanders. I think they could play with Carolina. I think they could roll with these teams. I don't know if they beat them, but it just looks different when your big guys don't perform like the other players' big guys. You got no,
yeah,
shot, man.
Yeah.
You got no shot. And has become very clear. Ray Ferraro will join us. Marcellus Wiley in the next hour as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. If you've got a surface to protect or a look you want to transform, home or industry, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.